Welcome to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey newsrooms across the country. I'm Christy Strausser, Odyssey's managing editor of news. It's officially summer, so let's talk storms, because they're not what they used to be. And they're not the worst where they used to be. Tornado Alley, for instance, has moved to the east to capture more of the Midwest and Southeast. Let's kick things off with WWJ in Detroit. Because more people in places like Michigan are thinking about a tornado safe room.
I'm sure that designs can vary, but what are the general guidelines for people who may be looking into getting these safe rooms?
The safe room, there are certain FEMA specifications to these safe rooms that they must meet in order to qualify. Several specifications, but just a couple of them. You know, the safe room must meet extreme wind speeds, be able to withstand structure in up to 250 mile per hour winds. The safe room must be anchored to the foundation. Other various tests to the doors, walls, and the roof systems that take place as well. All of that information is available on a resource website that we've launched, our website. There is a link to our website that everyone can read all the specific details with that and all the details about the program as well.
And are there certain areas of the state that residents should be looking into this more than other areas, or is this something that's kind of recommended across the board?
There are certain parts of the state, like the southern lower peninsula, where based on, you know, previous data, safe room, those who are in that area will be selected, opposed to, you know, further up north where tornadoes are less frequent. They read online all of the specifications, requirements, etc., and are interested in having a safe room potentially installed at their primary residence. They have until June 15th to apply online. 50 applicants will be chosen through a random selection process. We'll also select an additional 100 applicants as a backup should homeowners withdraw throughout the process of the program. Those who meet the requirements may receive a rebate covering up to 75% of eligible costs that are associated with the installation and construction of a tornado safe room. The maximum reimbursement amount is just a little over $7,000. You have to live in Michigan. You have to own a permanent residence in the state. EMHSD is actually using this process to apply for a grant that would fund the Michigan Safe Room Rebate Program if the state is selected. If the state is selected, the funding will be coming through FEMA's Building Resilient Infrastructure and Communities, or BRIC, grant program, but there's no guarantee. So just to keep that in mind, there are still a few hurdles to jump yet, but if the state is selected to kind of initiate this program and we get the green light, residents will be selected and notified that they've been selected to continue the process.
So residents are encouraged to fill out the application and then just wait to make sure that funding goes through, correct?
Yes. You know, as we know, Mother Nature seems to have a mind of her own these days. And anyone that is interested is more than welcome to apply. Program. We've also set up a frequently asked questions section on our website that does address a lot of the questions. Again, they can get to that resource page by visiting our social media platforms, MISH EMHSD on Facebook and X, to learn more information about the program.
So that's tornado safe rooms. But how about people who shuck off safety and actually chase storms? Here's more from WWJ about storm chasers.
We've had some pretty significant storms. Is that typical for this time of year? It seems like we've seen some more than usual.
No, I don't think I would use the word unprecedented here. You know, has it been an active spring? Absolutely. Would I say that it's the most active it's ever been? No. Is it slow? Absolutely not. But, you know, early in the year, we are prone to some active weather at times. And There have been multiple times that I can remember, you know, growing up and everything in Michigan where we had just as much active weather as we have had this year.
You guys kind of seem to be a little bit on the front lines as far as getting the word out if there are severe storms and stuff like that, or if there's a tornado, like unfortunately we've seen lately. Why is it so important for you guys to have these live streams and to have them on so many platforms and constantly be updating what people need to be aware of?
You know, there isn't anywhere else, you know, another business or an entity that can cover the entire state for any severe weather 24/7 like we do. I'm trying to find the graphic here that I have on my end that says how many severe thunderstorm and tornado warnings we've covered over the last couple of years here. I believe the number is 653, but I want to be 100% sure before I throw that number out there. But, you know, covering the severe weather from beginning to end has always been our mission statement, and, you know, helping turn a inactive mindset into a reactive mindset, you know, where someone maybe goes from thinking, you know, it can't happen to me to, okay, what do I do when it does happen to me, or if it does happen to me, right? That's another thing that's very important for us because we want to help keep people safe.
We kind of see, we run the gamut of weather from snow to severe thunderstorms. Really, the only thing we're missing is a hurricane, unless you're on Lake Superior. But what is your best advice for people before you run into a severe storm? What kind of preparation do you need to make so that way, if something happens, you're prepared to respond appropriately?
Yeah, no, that's another really good question. And, you know, the short answer, you know, you kind of said it in your question, is be prepared, right? You know, knowing where to go in your home, you know, in the event of a tornado warning or destructive severe weather or severe wind warning, you know, having an emergency kit to where, you know, you don't always have to have tons of supplies, but, you know, you never know what could happen if you're going to be stuck in the basement or stuck in the storm shelter, or if you have neither one of those, you know, stuck in a bathroom or a closet somewhere. Having some food and some water in there is always a great idea. And, you know, having things to cover your head with, like pillows, another great idea. And having a buddy system, right? Checking in with your neighbor, checking in with your friend, making sure that they're taking shelter and being just as prepared as you are when that severe weather strikes. It's another great way to stay safe.
I've heard you guys say it before, but if somebody happens to find themselves in a town or city that is having severe weather, the possibility of a tornado or a tornado has touched down, and they would like to go outside and look at the tornado, what is your best advice for somebody that's like, they really just want to see what's going on?
Well, you know, if you can do so safely and you have the ability to read radar, you know, to go check it out, you know, I don't think it hurts to have a little bit of, you know, visual confidence to see what's going on. But, you know, you can't always believe everything you see looking outside either. You know, it's oftentimes a really calm before a tornado comes through. And, you know, people say the calm before the storm for a reason, right? And you don't want to be caught outdoors when something like that happens. So having other sources of information like Michigan Storm Chasers or local broadcast media who might be, you know, live, they're great ways to see where the storms are and what's happening real time. As of March 25th, so almost a month ago, there had been 693 severe thunderstorms warnings and tornado warnings combined from 2024 through March 5th of 2026. And we were actually able to live stream all 693 of those warnings. So When we say from beginning to end and we will cover everything, we don't take it lightly. Doesn't matter if it's the middle of the night, middle of the day, we will stop what we're doing to cover the severe thunderstorm and tornado warnings.
For people who are maybe unfamiliar with how you guys work, how is it that you're able to have footage from some of these storms that maybe aren't by your location? Like, how are you guys able to get the information from kind of those more remote areas and make sure that everybody knows what's going on?
Yeah, so there's a couple different ways that we get it. You know, the first way is we do have a network of storm chasers across the entire state, and they go out and chase the storms and send their footage and reports back to us, and then we can forward those along to the National Weather Service. But we also have a network of over 110 different cameras that are stationary that point up into the sky to record stuff like the northern lights, severe weather, meteors, and any other phenomenon that occurs in the sky. And, you know, we're very fortunate to have both of those networks to constantly be getting pictures and videos from. But the biggest and most valuable way that we're able to get that footage in is from everybody else, maybe some who even are listening in right now, who just send reports into the page. If they see something outside their window, they take a picture, they take a video, they send it over to us, and we're able to go, wow, that's really what's happening there. Okay, we need to forward that along. And we do.
Perhaps no storm was as covered or considered as tragic as the one that struck Camp Mystic in Texas last year, bringing a sudden rush of storm waters that killed kids and staff. Here's more on Camp Mystic's plans for this year from KRLD in Texas.
After outrage by families of victims who died in last year's flooding in the Texas Hill Country, Camp Mystic makes a big announcement about its future.
Camp Mystic says it's withdrawing its application for a license this summer. The camp says it intends to remove any doubt. Camp Mystic has heard concerns from grieving families and investigating committees in the Texas legislature. And at a hearing in Austin, independent investigator Casey Garrett said the camp missed several opportunities to keep kids safe.
Not a single person said they were instructed sufficiently on what to do in any kind of emergency.
Camp Mystic says it'll fully cooperate with all investigations. And Governor Greg Abbott says the Department of State Health Services and Texas Rangers are still investigating, and those results will be made public as soon as possible. From the 24-Hour News Center, Alan Skaya, News Radio 1080 KURLD.
Meantime, State Rep. Russ Verdell sent a request to the governor. He's asking for a special session to fix the camp safety legislation. He says it's causing lots of problems for camps all over the state. Right now, there's only 3 summer camps that hold licenses to open this summer.
In the aftermath of any storm, insurance coverage is a question that's top of mind. But what to do to make sure you get what you deserve? Here's KRLD with more.
I'm David Rankin. That is Eric Bushman. It has been an extremely busy few days for North Texas when it comes to bad weather. That means insurance adjusters will have their work cut out for them as people start to make claims for the damages to their homes and their cars and everything else. So what goes into that process? We are joined by Rich Johnson. He's from the Insurance Council of Texas. So how soon do insurance companies start to see claims filed after we see the rounds of weather like we have?
I mean, it depends, but sometimes it's minutes or hours. I think most people realize, hopefully, we're starting to educate. We've been through this kind of weather that we're just seeing more frequently, and so people are used to it. But yeah, it's pretty quick that you can get claims in, especially now that everything is on apps. You know, you can do it on your phone, take pictures, take video, and send it right to your insurance company.
Especially if you have people that may just have a few shingles missing from maybe some light hail. But if you have something where you have, you know, a house is gone, you know, has been completely wiped off the map, they're not thinking clearly. They're in shock. Are some of the issues that insurance companies have to deal with? You know, that they have to work with people who are, you know, victims of something completely devastating?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And most of them, you know, depending on the scale and the size, will set up an insurance village, or they'll send out their RVs, and so they can have that one-on-one interaction. I've been a part of several of those, and they are heartbreaking, whether it's a wildfire or a hurricane or a flood, or actually a tornado I dealt with up in 2015 up in Dallas. And so it's getting, you know, people are completely devastated. Their house is gone. Their documents are gone. You know, they had things in a file cabinet or a safe or whatever it might have been. And so they're just trying to gather their life as much as they can kind of electronically. And typically, and thankfully, most insurance companies have all those documents. They'll just need your name, kind of social, kind of the general information to get into your files and be able to see your policy, see what you're owed. And especially with total losses, they usually have kind of a like an express version of a claim where it's clear that your house is gone, and so you'll get payment or at least action a lot quicker than something where you might need to send out an adjuster and look at something.
You mentioned the fact that apps have become such an integral part of all of our lives. How much of a game changer has that been for insurance companies and for the customers?
It's been huge, and it's, you know, we're looking at say a decade or so of having an app and getting people on board with that. And just the technology behind the app is making everything so much quicker. You know, there are now kind of AI exclusive, what we call insurtechs, companies that are based on AI, and they're solving claims and solving problems and underwriting policies within seconds because you're able to send those pictures in. You know, their back end reads, okay, there's damage to this house, these people need payment, and there's money in the account. So it's not only the app and being able to take pictures, but also just the rapid development of innovation that insurance companies are getting behind.
How important is it this time of year, or maybe just once a year, have it on the calendar, a reminder that someone in the house needs to go around and document the house, especially with photographs? Because after something like this happens, if you don't have that, it may be too late.
That is a great point. And we call it a home inventory, whether that is, you know, if you're a spreadsheet kind of person, go ahead and make a spreadsheet, especially the big ticket items. For the most part, everybody, you know, your policy is garnered by the value of rebuild, right? So what's it going to cost to rebuild your home? And then the personal contents and the things inside that are going to be based on the value of that home. So if you have a total loss, you're going to get a check for the most part, or deposit, without a whole lot of documentation of what you used to have, because it's already kind of set. But if there are big ticket items, different thing, you know, maybe there's changes or upgrades that you made to your home, you know, you want to document those with your insurance company beforehand, but making sure that you document those before and after the fact before a storm actually happens. And you're right. It's easy. Stand in the middle of the room, do a 360 with your video camera, or your phone, and just simply email that to yourself or store it to a cloud storage, so you have record of that. You know, look, I did have hardwood floor, or I had granite here, or, you know, vinyl floor here, that you can discern with your insurance company.
One thing that's come out of
these. Do that. We call that the blue sky thing. Do that when there's blue skies. Don't be doing it when there's a tornado heading for your, you know, or a hailstorm on the way. Get it done, twice a year. Just make sure that you're updating those things.
One thing that you mentioned the fact that hailstorms are just terrible. We've seen in the last couple of days around here hailstones as big as grapefruits, for lack of a better phrase. And what kind of damage can stones of that size versus the pea-sized ones do to a home or a car?
Yeah, massive. There's been times where I've been in Colorado where it literally looked like a neighborhood was hit with artillery. There was holes in the side of houses, through windows, doors, windows, and especially those roofs. And that is right now, hail is the biggest cost driver right now for insurance. That's why one of the big drivers why we saw insurance rates creep up or even spike in 23, 24 was that hail, and being able to rebuild resiliently after those hailstorms. What can we do? Can we put on a better roof? Can we put on a fortified roof? Can we figure out how we're going to side our housing a little bit differently when we rebuild? Can delay those repairs later after you have another hailstorm?
What's the fine line where insurance companies decide, okay, we're not going to just wait for the calls, we're going to go to the site where they go and they actually set up command centers to be easier for people to just walk up? What makes them decide that's the way we're going to go this time?
Yeah, each one is going to be different. They'll have, they kind of have what they call CAT plans or catastrophe response plans, and there'll be a set of criteria. It may be, hey, we have... it may be a percentage of the market. Hey, we're, you know, we have a really saturated, you know, we have X amount of customers in an area. Or it could be telecommunications is down. Like, we cannot communicate with our customers, so we need to get there when we can. And it could just be just the vast devastation. Is it a massive flood? Is it a massive wildfire? So it just varies. It just kind of depends on what the criteria that they set up in their catastrophe response plans that warrant that.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline, your radio news from Odyssey. On Deadline is written and produced by me, Christy Strasser, and by Lauren Barry. Subscribe wherever you get podcasts.